While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to the rest of the world, wherever you are listening to, from where you tuned in from. Welcome to On the Reading News Analysis, where today's headlines become tomorrow's understanding. Now, as Namibia enters another week of opportunity, of challenges and transformation, the conversations shaping our future continue to evolve from economic growth and governance reforms to technological innovation, youth empowerment, climate resilience, and regional development. The decisions being made today will influence the nation for years to come. Now, this afternoon, we turn our attention to the stories making an impact across Africa and the wider world. Now, on our radar are the growing demands for transparency and accountability in public institutions, efforts to create jobs and stimulate economic growth, development in the energy and mining sectors, and the role of technology in transforming how governments, businesses, and citizens interact. We also examine the changing global landscape as geopolitical tensions, trade realignments, artificial intelligence, climate challenges, and economic uncertainty continue to influence international affairs. Namibia finds itself navigating a world where local decisions are increasingly connected to global events. Now, closer to home, communities across the country are looking for solutions that deliver tangible results, reliable service delivery, quality education, accessible healthcare, sustainable infrastructure, and economic opportunities for young people entering the workforce. Now, these issues remain central to public discourse and are critical to Namibia's development journey. Now, right here on the Reading News Analysis, we believe journalism serves its greatest purpose when it informs, explains, and empowers. Now, beyond reporting events, we seek the understanding their to understand their significance, explore their implications, and provide context needed to make informed decisions. Now, through balanced reporting, expert perspectives, exclusive interviews, and in-depth analysis, we connect the dots between policy, people, and progress. We ask the important questions, examine the evidence, and explore the solutions shaping our collective future. And as always, we invite you to be part of the conversation, so stay connected through our radio broadcasts, digital platforms, and social media channels. For your voice, your perspective, and your engagement help strengthen the democratic dialogue that drives national development. This is On the Reading News Analysis, delivering facts, exploring perspectives, and making sense of the issues shaping Namibia, Africa, and the world, with yours truly, Dafa Happy Juju. Now let's get right into today's news analysis. The Karas Governor, David Hart has called for greater unity, investment, and collaboration to unlock the region's economic potential while highlighting persistent challenges in healthcare, education, and youth unemployment. Now, that is during his State of the Region address, also known as SORA. Now, delivering his inaugural SORA, Hertz outlined progress made across key sectors and identified infrastructure expansion, renewable energy development, agricultural growth, and youth empowerment as critical pillars for the region's future. He stressed that strategic investments in roads, in railways, in ports, and green energy projects could position Karas as a major driver of Namibia's industrialization agenda. The governor also raised concerns about the state of public health care, revealing that the region's health directorate is operating with significant staff shortages despite recent investments in medical infrastructure and equipment. He said addressing human resource constraints remains essential to improving service delivery across urban and rural communities. Hertz further highlighted youth unemployment, educational outcomes, land access, water security, and agricultural development as areas requiring urgent attention. He urged stakeholders from government, the private sector, traditional authorities, and local communities to work together to ensure inclusive growth and improved living standards throughout the region. Let's take a listen to the governor's speech himself.
Delivering his State of the Region address.
We are Southern Campus. The Namibia University of Science and Technology, the Namibia Institute of Mining and Technology, the Keetmanshoop Vocational Training Center, and other educational institutions in our region are the incubators of skills, innovation, and expertise required to drive these emerging industries forward. I sincerely encourage our young people to capitalize on this rich educational environment at your doorstep. As I present a comprehensive overview of projects budgeted for the 2025-2026 fiscal year, it represents our collective commitment to improving lives, creating opportunities, and building a Karas region that works for all its people. Honorable Chairperson, allow me now to turn to the principal business that brings us together today, the fulfillment of my solemn constitutional mandate as enshrined in Article 110A, Sub-Article 5 of the Namibian Constitution. This provision requires that the regional governor address the council meeting annually to account for government activities following the delivery of the State of the Nation address by Her Excellency, then Head of State, Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah. Honorable Chairperson, honorable councillors, distinguished guests, fellow residents of the Karas region, I stand before you today with profound humility as we collectively reflect upon our journey as a regional government, a journey marked by our steadfast commitment to implementing our national development plans and advancing our regional development strategic plans. It is both an honor and a responsibility to account for the stewardship entrusted to us by the people of this region. Our collective journey toward development begins with the assurance that every citizen, every home, every community live under the shield of safety. For it is within the walls of peace that progress is built, and through the strength of security that prosperity finds its voice. It is for this reason that I have chosen to begin with the State of the Region address with the safety and security cluster. Because without safety, there can be no peace. And without peace, there can be no progress. The Namibian Police Force is the constitutional guardian of law and order, the protector of life and property, and the first line of defense against crime and the lawlessness in our society. Karas region is a vast territory spanning over 161,000 square kilometers, bordering the Republic of Namibia to the south and the Republic of Botswana to the east. This region is characterized by remote communities, long distances, and porous borders. The role of the Namibian Police Force remains both critical and challenging. The Karas region faces unique policing challenges. Cross-border crime, drug trafficking, stock theft, gender-based violence, limited resources and manpower. I must state that despite these challenges, the men and women in safety and security cluster in the CARAS continue to serve with dedication, professionalism, courage, under difficult circumstances, with limited resources, and at great personal risk. During the reporting period from April 2025 to March 2026, a total of 4,300 cases were reported, with a clearance rate of 41%. The contributing factors to crime are alcohol and drug abuse, poverty caused by drug abuse, and unemployment and greediness. More drug-related cases were recorded due to the cross-border crime, which were detected by the vigilance of members and successful local operations, as well as joint operations with our counterparts, the South African Police Service, conducted at Ariamsvlei and Noord-Oever border posts. Two major cases of dealing in drugs were recorded at Noord-Oever and Ariamsvlei border posts, respectively, with a combined value of 6 million Namibian dollars, involving one Namibian and one South African female who were arrested and detained. Stocks theft under the period under review is a total of 65 cases were recorded to the value of 459,000. 12 big stocks were recovered to the value of 51,000 and 1,725 small stock were reported stolen, valued at 3.1 million, of which 168 were recovered, valued at 470,000. A total of 100.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Regarding our region, the manning of all entry and exit points remain a critical priority. This measure is essential to curb cross-border crime and to protect our communities from the ripple effects of illicit activities along the southern frontier. Our law enforcement agencies continue to work in close collaboration with their counterparts in South Africa, strengthening joint operations and intelligence sharing in the fight against transnational crime. Regular border patrols are maintained along the Namibia-South African borders to secure both the internal stability of our region and the broader safety of our nation. The Namibian police force in CARAS has performed commendably during the said period, achieving a 41% clearance rate, securing major convictions in murder, rape, and drug trafficking cases. They have also recovered millions of dollars in stolen property and confiscated drugs. I urge the citizens of this region to support community policing initiatives, to strengthening partnerships between police and communities, and I commend Commissioner M.H.J. Katamila, the regional commander, and all members of the Namibian Police Force in CARAS region for their dedication, professionalism, and courage in the face of adversity. Honorable councillors, distinguished guests, fellow residents of our region, the Ministry of Home Affairs, Immigration, Safety and Security, also represented by the Deputy Minister this morning. Civil registration is the foundation of citizenship, and it is the gateway to our rights and the cornerstone of our national planning. Without it, our children cannot go to school. Our people cannot vote and open a bank account or secure their family's future. Now, the Directorate of Civil Registration in this region has made powerful strides in making these essential services accessible to all. Through access and consistent civil registration services, the region continues to restore dignity and legal identity to its residents, ensuring that every birth, marriage, and death is rightfully recorded, and that every citizen is recognized, visible, and protected under the law. Despite these achievements, a critical bottleneck still remains. 1,860 identity cards lie uncollected in our regional offices. An uncollected identity card is a wasted opportunity. Your ID is your dignity. It is your citizenship and your voice in our democracy. Urgent call that I'm making today to all the residents of Clara's region is, please collect your identity documents. Traditional authorities, community leaders, and councillors are also urged to mobilize our communities. Let us get these documents to their rightful owners. I'm pleased to announce that the ministry has taken bold strides in breaking down geographical barriers to essential service through strategic infrastructure expansions. The Karasburg sub-regional office was inaugurated on the 30th of June 2025 and now brings decentralized civil registration services closer to the people in Karasburg and the surrounding areas. Furthermore, the first-time ID registration services launched on the 30th of March 2026 have spared residents the financial and logistical burden of traveling to Kathmandu, ensuring that every citizen, particularly those residing in Karasburg East constituency, can now claim their identity with dignity and ease right where they live. Honorable Chairperson, honorable councillors and esteemed residents of the Karas region, as we turn to the Division of Gender Equality and Child Welfare, we reflect on a branch of our government that stands at the very heart of human dignity, dedicated to protecting our most vulnerable populations, upholding the rights of women and children, and ensuring equitable access to social protection for all. This division embodies our collective conscience, reminding us that true development is measured by the compassion with which we safeguard those who are vulnerable. The key development deliverables for the said period is that our targeted social safety nets and financial interventions have directly combated poverty, advanced gender equity, and secured foundational education for thousands of families across the region.
Karas region is Namibia's largest region by area and is home to major economic assets including mining operations, the port town of Roodwits, the diamond-producing area of Oranjemund, extensive livestock farming and emerging green hydrogen developments. The region is increasingly viewed as a strategic hub for energy, for mining, for logistics and agricultural expansion. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Please stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
time. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Namibia's premier oil and gas industry gathering is set to retain with an expanded program aimed at strengthening local participation, skills development, and collaboration across the country's rapidly growing energy sector. The fourth edition of the Namibia Oil and Gas Conference and Exhibition for 2026 will take place in Windhoek from the 18th to the 20th of August 2026 under the theme From Decision to Dividend, Making Namibia's Oil Work for Namibians, hosted by the Economic Association of Namibia in partnership with the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board, NIPDB, and the Hans Seidler Foundation. The conference has received official endorsement from the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy. Strategic partners include NAMCO, NSE Incorporated, and Rhino Resources. Organizers say this year's conference reflects a deliberate shift from exploration and investment discussion towards ensuring that the economic benefits of Namibia's petroleum industry translate into meaningful opportunities for citizens, for businesses, and for communities. Speaking at the official launch, EAN Chairperson and Monasa Advisories and Associate Managing Director Jason Kasuto said Namibia's energy future will depend on strong partnerships between government, industry, local businesses, training institutions, and communities. He noted that the 2026 theme reflects a new phase in Namibia's petroleum journey as the country moves from exploration success toward ensuring tangible economic returns for ordinary Namibians. Now, the conference program has been expanded significantly to accommodate growing interest from both local and international stakeholders. Organizers expect close to 2,000 delegates from government, operators, investors, service providers, MSMEs, entrepreneurs, academia, students, and civil society organization. A key feature of the 2026 conference will be its enhanced focus on local content development. Now, pre-conference activities on the 18th of August are set to include masterclasses, entrepreneurship workshops, supply engagement sessions, speed networking opportunities, and dedicated discussions on how Namibian businesses can access opportunities within the oil and gas value chain. NIPDB is also set to host local content pitching sessions, providing a platform for Namibian entrepreneurs and emerging enterprises to showcase their products, their services, and innovations to industry decision makers. In addition to that, a dedicated future generation session is set to focus on youth empowerment, on mentorship, technical skills development, and career opportunities in the energy sector. Meanwhile, Economic Association of Namibia Chief Executive Officer Cons Karamata emphasized that the ultimate success of Namibia's oil industry should not be measured solely by production volumes or investment figures. And Namibia has emerged as one of the world's most promising new petroleum frontiers following a series of major offshore discoveries in the Orange Basin since 2022. Now, exploration progresses as exploration progresses towards development and potential production, policymakers and industry leaders are increasingly focusing on ensuring that local communities do benefit through employment, through enterprise development, and through skills transfer and infrastructure investment. And against this backdrop, NOGC 2026, or Namibia Oil and Gas Conference for 2026, aims to serve as a platform for dialogue, for partnership building, and practical solutions to ensure that Namibia's oil and gas resources contribute significantly to long-term national development and inclusive economic transformation.
NAMCOR is proud to be a strategic partner of the fourth edition of the Namibia Oil and Gas Conference, and it will take place between the 18th to the 20th of August 2026. This year's conference will be held under the theme From Decision to Dividends, Making Namibia's Oil Work for Namibians. With a strong focus on local participation, skills development, supply opportunities, and inclusive economic growth. This conference is expected to bring together close to 3,000 delegates, including government operators, investors, service companies, SMEs, entrepreneurs, academics, students, and civil society. As Namibia's national oil company, NAMCOR remains committed to supporting platforms like these that promote collaboration, synergies, knowledge sharing, and meaningful Namibian participation in the country's growing energy sector.
Okay. Let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more. Please do stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
In other news, the city of Windhoek has officially launched its first people-centered smart city strategy. Marking a significant step in the capital city's efforts to modernize urban governance, improve service delivery, and prepare for future population growth and development. Now, speaking at the launch ceremony held at the City of Windhoek head office this morning, City Chief Executive Officer Moses Machai said the strategy was the product of extensive consultations and stakeholder engagement involving residents, government institutions, the private sector, academia, civil society organizations, and development partners. Machai emphasized that the strategy was designed around the needs of people rather than technology alone, ensuring that digital transformation directly contributes to improving the quality of life for residents. The extensive inputs received from stakeholders across the city helped shape a comprehensive and inclusive strategy that reflects the aspirations and priorities of Windhoek's communities, he said. Let's now hear from the horse's mouth itself, that is CEO of City of Windhoek, Moses Machai.
dicta the information, but it's definitely something that I believe has given us meaning at the city to understand exactly what a smart city is. And today is quite a marvelous day that we present to you the completion of at least a people-centered smart city strategy that will demonstrate our understanding of what a smart city is and a shared commitment for us to shape the future of innovation, partnership, technology in improving the lives of the residents of Windhoek. Of course, on behalf of the city and on my own behalf, we would like to use this opportunity to appreciate and send our gratitude to UN Habitat and the UNITAC project and all partners who have played a part in collaborating on this project. Your guidance, your expertise, your support, and most definitely your commitment has enabled us to develop an ambitious and practical strategy that has now brought meaning to what we thought was smart city. Now we know, and now we understand, now we can talk what the smart city is all about. The strategy was developed through extensive stakeholder engagement, and I remember Mr. Rupi briefing me all the time about afternoon meetings that went into evenings with consultants and community members and working groups. They contributed immensely. Residents, businesses, academia, civil society, government, development partner, elected leaders, and also unelected leaders, officials from the city, have all had a view to express in order to shape what this strategy will reflect as a collective and as a city. We recognize that many around the world as cities now operate in an increasingly complex environment with rapid urbanization, rising service demands, climate change, technological changes, infrastructure pressures, economic transformation will require a new approach to planning, administration, to governance. The strategy that we are about to launch today offers a framework to attempt to try to address the challenges from a perspective of evidence-based reference point. However, the strategy that we are about to receive today provides a broader and a unified perspective of initiatives within a coherent integrated framework that will have a say in urban transformation. Ladies and gentlemen, we believe this strategy will be another paper on our tables if it is not practically implemented and if resources are not apportioned to enable those initiatives in the strategy to be realized. The success
Speaking also at the event is Councillor Zakaria Unona.
It is a honor to accept on behalf of Windhoek residents the people-centered smart city strategy 2026 to 2036, which will guide our city's transformation over the next decade. I would like to express our sincere gratitude to you and Habitant, the UNITAC project, and all partners who contributed to this important strategy. I especially acknowledge the leadership and commitment of Ms. Adrian Abea Yamelu and Ms. Aline Machado Mata, whose presence today demonstrates UN Habitant's continued confidence in Windhoek's future. This strategy is much more than a document. It is a shared vision. It is a commitment. Most importantly, it promises our residents that technology, innovations, and digital transformation will be used to improve lives, create opportunities, and ensure more in the left behind. Ladies and gentlemen, Windhoek, like many cities across Africa, faces unique challenges and opportunities. We face rapid urbanization, rising demand for housing and service, mobility challenges, climate pressures, and the need to create jobs and economic opportunity for our growing population. At the same time, unprecedented technological advancements are reshaping how cities are planned, governed, and managed. The question has never been whether Windhoek should embrace technology. The real question is how we enhance technology responsibly, inclusively, and strategically to improve quality of life for our people. These people-centered smart city strategy answers the question. It recognizes that smart city is not defined solely by technology. A truly smart city is one that places people at the center of development. A city where digital innovation improves access to service. A city where data, information is better decision making. A city where mobility is efficient and accessible. A city where communities are connected. A city where economic opportunities are expanded. And a city where sustainability and resilience are embedded in every aspect of our urban development. Ladies and gentlemen, the strategy comes at an important time for Windhoek. The city is pursuing several transformative initiatives that will serve as a key pillars of our smart cities journey. Those include commercializing the city's fiber optic network to provide the digital backbone for smart cities applications, digital governance, connectivity, and innovation. We are also collaborating with the national government and development partners to modernize public transport and improve urban mobility. This includes proposed
Okay. The People-Centered Smart City Strategy is an initiative that was developed in partnership with UN Habitat and its innovation arm, UNITEC, or United Nations Innovation Technology Accelerator for Cities. Now, under a global program promoting sustainable and inclusive urban development, the strategy is set to guide the city's digital transformation agenda over the next decade. Now, people-centered smart city differs from traditional smart city models by placing citizens at the center of planning and decision-making. Rather than focusing solely on technology infrastructure, the approach seeks to use digital tools to use data and innovation in order to improve public services, strengthen governance, increase public participation, and promote social inclusion. The strategy is expected to support improvements in key areas such as municipal service delivery, urban planning, mobility, digital connectivity, environmental sustainability, public participation, and economic development. Now, city officials believe the framework will help Windhoek address growing urban challenges while creating opportunities for innovation and investment. The launch comes at a time when Windhoek is pursuing several major urban transformation projects, including the expansion and commercialization of its municipal fiber optic network, the formalization of informal settlements, and the establishment of a science and innovation center aimed at supporting research, entrepreneurship, and youth innovation. Now, according to UN Habitat, people-centered smart city strategies seek to ensure that digital technologies contribute to sustainability, to inclusivity, prosperity, and human rights while preventing communities from being left behind in the digital age. Now, the approach has gained increasing global support as cities seek solutions to rapid urbanization, climate pressures, housing challenges, and growing demands for efficient public services. Now, for Windhoek, the strategy represents more than a technology roadmap. It serves as a long-term vision for building a resilient, inclusive, and innovative city capable of meeting the needs of a growing urban population while improving the everyday lives of residents. Now, the launch positions Windhoek among a growing number of African cities embracing smart urban development, with city leaders hoping that digital innovation, citizen participation, and data-driven decision-making will play a central role in shaping the capital's future. With that being said, let's pause right here. We'll be back shortly after the commercial break. See you soon.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwanda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM. The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Okay. Now joining me in studio is my colleague Dwight to give more background on the smart people-centered smart city strategy. Dwight, thank you so much for joining us. You were at the event. What is it exactly that people can now expect from this people-centered smart city strategy? How will it enhance their lives and improve their lives better?
All right. Thank you, Happy, and good afternoon to the listeners. So, Happy, when we look at this, obviously, this is a particular strategy that City of Windhoek will they are aiming, I almost said will, because I found out just after the whole particular sort of like event launch and the launch of this particular strategic document that it still has to go to the council, specifically for the council entirely, to basically rubber stamp the thing to say, yes, we approve of every strategy within the document itself. So
There's
probably something that might and the document is already printed, ne?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's already like in a book format.
Yeah.
But
even though it's still.
Yeah. So it still has to go in front of the council, and the council have to then see how they then incorporate that into the overall strategy of the city itself and even them as a council in terms of how some of these deliverables will be met. Now, the mayor, what the listeners obviously would have heard,
mm-hmm.
he did cite a few particular things. Integrated transport that actually works for the residents and mm-hmm. the inhabitants, mm-hmm. not just of Windhoek, but also of commuting towns, Riebe to the south,
okay.
potentially Okahanya. He did not mention Okahanya.
Yeah.
But potentially Okahanya. And then obviously also scenarios regarding the formalization of informal settlements, which is the biggest I should say the headache of any developing country, specifically in Africa. It's not just Namibia suffering from this. And the aim that you can basically see from this specific discussion, Happy, mm-hmm. is that rapid urbanization is the particular
concern.
It is a concern, but it's also the future.
Mm.
Meaning why it is a concern is primarily that this strategic document technically plays into a UN level document, which is why the UN Habitat lady was also there. Obviously the listeners didn't hear her voice because, we only played the CEO and the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
But, her particular insights or her particular contribution was based on a discussion that it is something that has to cascade from a UN level, obviously SDG and all that other particular strategic, goals that mm-hmm. are set up for countries that they signed on to. Now that cascaded into the UN agencies. One of them is the UN Habitat. UN Habitat is specifically positioned on urbanization and, housing and all the other things around what you would call a city or an urban area.
Yeah.
Now the downside from this is, Happy, that recently, 2 months back in April, just to be sure about my timeline, they had the urbanization conference, the global conference, a UN Habitat one, that was based literally upon finding the solutions for the future. Now, this particular time frame of what City of Windhoek, obviously, that they did their stakeholder engagements, You can assume somewhere between start of this year up until, I think, in last month, because there was also another particular media indication that they gave as City of Windhoek that literally the implementation phase is to be expected of the same strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you launch something? You tell media the other day, last week, we are launching this 3 days ago, and then you have a whole hoo-ha ceremony thing with all councillors and some dignitaries to say today, we're launching it again. But at the first launch, you're saying implementation, and the second one, you're now saying this document has to first go to the council for the council to say, yes, thumbs up, or maybe let's wait for it to cool down, because there's another strategy of the city of Windhoek that first has to run its course. So we obviously have to see how this gets integrated into the broader goals of the city of Windhoek.
Mm-hmm.
Because the initial goals of the city of Windhoek is literally that the city of Windhoek was obviously Namibia's only city.
Yes.
For a long time, Walvis tried claiming a city status of some sort. I don't know how they thought about that. I'm sorry, Walvis, but when you look at things, you also get to ask the particular question about how does Walvis convert itself from being just a harbor slash fishing slash industrial coastal installation to now thinking about other particular needs, because other particular needs include, for example, bringing other kinds of business. It's not just about having mining around you or having fishing or having harbor services, but you enhance harbor services. So if you remember the Namport terminal expansion that obviously had taken place,
mm-hmm.
The goals then were sort of like increase capacity for storage and increase capacity for, incoming and outgoing goods. Now, what does that sound like to you? That sounds like literally it's a boat full of goods coming and going, but you don't see cruise liners. You don't see what's these other, transportation-based maritime businesses actually also utilizing Namibia's particular. So Namibia has to also now, which is city of Windhoek and also other urban areas, they've got to think about how do you position the urban center to the urban zone, basically, to basically work for the people living in the urban zone. Because everything is about people to people. It's not about, sorry for using another particular discussions reference, but it is based on people to people indications and interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually where economic activity stems from. Economic activity doesn't stem from you connecting a mine to the port facility.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Now, for this people-centered strategy, smart city strategy, is there, within the conversation, within the talks and even the engagement afterwards, is there something that is showing that this will significantly, of course, I mean, people within the structure of city of Windhoek might see it as going to make tangible impact in people's lives, but then us on the receiving end might not really see it like that. We might feel like it's not addressing the immediate needs of the local people in the city. So is there something that was showing that, okay, this will definitely improve probably even transport itself? Not just, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? I actually, text the spokesperson of the city of Windhoek about perhaps when can we start talking about buses? Actually, she posted something about bus routines.
Mm.
When can we have buses?
I know it was the renewal of tickets.
Right.
Buses.
Right.
But when you look at it, just to answer that question that you are trying to get to.
Yeah.
Now, this is also why I wanted the document, because I wanted to see basically, the mayor might be saying, hey, listen, improving commuter transport service. Now,
how? The question might be how.
Now, he highlighted there might be a commuting railway system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a railway system of a commuting nature, which they call intercity, but it's literally within an urban area's zones or.
Yeah.
And then you get the one literally outside that connects two urban areas.
Yeah.
So two towns to each other.
Yeah.
Now, we've heard particular indications in some way or another, specifically on here on Eagle FM as well, that people try to come up with an idea to say, hey, listen, we can alleviate one particular burden. So you are asking basically about alleviation of a burden. The current burden today even though we also highlighted, and even though the global media is saying, and even though Donald Trump announced on his Truth Social, and even though the Pakistani Prime Minister announced on his X account, official Pakistani Prime Minister X account, that the war with Iran is over, we still have to see the final signing ceremony take place. Because up until now, Trump says one thing today, just an hour later, things
something
change.
Else happened.
Yeah. So this means to any particular oil speculator, any petroleum producer, any petroleum petrochemicals producer, the situation is still volatile as is. So if one statement is made, you have to see the action actually manifest. And if the, and the lack of an action manifesting is just, you know, hot air that was spoken of here. So the reason why I said about that document, I wanted to see it. I wanted to get a physical copy. The one counselor who spoke there cited literally that, because he was part of the particular task force from the city of Windhoek side, when they had to develop this particular strategy document, is this first has to go to council. I was like thinking, but last week you announced an implementation thing of some sort. So why is a document first compiled, made to look nice, lovely cover, lovely binding, and then it's not, it has never gone, the draft of anything has never gone to the council itself. So that's one particular question itself. Then the actual impact on the ground that you are asking about is, for example, we then have to ask the question in terms of, figures, like how much would, for example, that, that urban railway system cost.
Yeah.
That aims to connect Karatura, the, this part of Windhoek. And they spoke about Rehoboth. I don't know why they also did not include Okahandja. Rehoboth is 90 kilometers through this mountain. But Okahandja, before we continue, we come back after the ad break.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Yeah, Dwight.
Yeah, so coming back to listeners from the ad break, so if you look at the geography, and that's why I always like the facts of the matter besides what some people say, not to say that people sometimes can, you know, not follow what they're saying or do the action to the words what that they mention. But if you look at the geography, right now, immediately, just off the cuff of thinking about geography in Namibia, it's a lot difficult to put another, look, there's an existing railway line obviously that connects Namibia from Transnamib.
Yeah, that needs to be fixed.
Yeah. Well, no, it is technically fixed because I saw the train driving here through past.
Infrastructure.
That too. You know, you can throw all those things in because the infrastructure is 100 years old. Okay, not the, not as it is. You know, yeah, it does get maintained. I am speaking under an assumption as well that it is regularly maintained. But when you look at a scenario of regular movement of people up and down a railway line.
Yeah.
You can't just have one railway line, Happy. If you go to Cape Town right now, you will find five lines running in and out of Cape Town. Five commuter lines separate from any heavy cargo, any heavy haulage. So even what the mayor mentioned about a potential commuter railway system network, this means they have to build an additional line next to what Transnamib already has. And the questions then would be, would Transnamib operate and run this, or would it be an expansion of City of Windhoek's transport features and functions? Another thing which is which we have spoken extensively here on Eagle FM, specifically with Helmut and I in the home run, has been a discussion of making the bus service circular, meaning it runs in a cycle.
That's what I was asking her. Guess what she told me.
Yeah. So if you go to any country in the world that has a public bus service, where you buy the tickets, you still do the ticket thing. But you buy a ticket, Happy, and you know every 15 minutes or every 30 minutes, there's a bus coming at the same stop. Not the same bus. The bus just takes you to a different destination in the city. Yeah. So, for example, if you get one here in Klein Windhoek, here at the HIDA Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? If you get one, you can have 5 to 6 or 7 options, meaning the same, a different bus every 30 or every 15 minutes.
Or even an hour, maybe 30
seconds. No, it's too long.
Mm.
An hour is too long to wait for a bus.
Yeah. Okay.
The reason why I say this is because how the scheduling of transport systems work in other cities is mm-hmm. that it runs in a loop the whole time. So you've literally got 5 buses in a line.
Yeah.
The 5 buses come to the same stop. But you pick the right bus that takes you to your stop.
Exactly.
You just wait for the time when your bus comes to your stop. How the buses are coded is based upon the codes or the numbering on the side of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to wait for bus C or for bus D or for bus 5 or for bus 7
mm-hmm.
and it runs in a loop. So it takes you to your, if you want to go to Grove Mall from Klein Windhoek, you wait for bus C taking you to Grove Mall.
Yeah.
You don't take bus A, potentially it takes you to Verniel, but it still comes back.
Yeah, yeah.
It still comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for some reason, yes, it is a needed particular service. In Windhoek itself, the bus runs like this, up and down.
Only in the morning and only...
late at night.
Yep.
Okay, from now, 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Until 6, I think. 6 is the latest.
Until 5.
5:30, I think, is the latest that the buses would run.
Oh yeah, but then because by 5:30 you should be on the bus already, on your way,
yeah.
En route home. True. And another thing also is that she did say until we have more buses, until City of Windhoek has more buses, then that cannot be implemented. And then the other thing is I can't remember specifically which year those buses, the new buses, were bought, but the new ones look more older than the older ones, sort of something like that.
You would actually see which ones are the older ones.
The new ones are the ones which have
the yellow handlebars,
sort of like, yes.
No, it's not
up and down.
It does have, it's you when you enter, it does look that you're sitting slightly weirdish because that's the intra city buses. So they are made for moving in a city. But when you see the old fleet of City of Windhoek, you will know which one is the old fleet. It's the old, like the school buses that we even drove on.
Yeah.
They are different school buses I drove on, but it's actually the oldest ones. It looks like a 4x4 bus, basically. It's slightly higher, higher suspension than this new one.
Than the new ones.
Now, if you see these particular, you know, kinds of infrastructure, they try to meet a specific need. Now you ask the question, the smart city, this people-centered smart city approach, what does it look like? So it's based upon specific needs. The big need, obviously, today, two of them running concurrently. The one is slightly longer and slightly more, I would call it politically charged than the other, is transport is not politically charged, but affordable housing is, which also includes the formalization of informal settlements, which includes extending electricity grids and water systems to those informal parts, which also then tries to meet the particular housing needs, specifically allowing how many new homeowners can you introduce into the system without you ultimately trying to, make the price as unaffordable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know there's a lot of nuance there in that particular needs scenario, because I've realized that property developers can come in with a massive bank account. They can offer a massive amount of money immediately to any local authority across Namibia and even in the world.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that you, the individual buyer, can do, either individual person can do. Which is also a scenario which has recently raised the discussion about why does a car of a million and a house of a million, why can you pay the car of a million in 5 years off, but you can't pay a house of a million in 5 years off, but you have to pay it over 20 years. Mm. Now, I can explain it to you from an accounting purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The one is a fixed asset. You can't pick it up and move.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is not a fixed asset, and the other one actually depreciates. But
the other one does not.
But a house can depreciate. It can depreciate.
But after a long period of time also.
No. You will find, it's a happy.
Mm.
I have found dilapidated structures in Windhoek. then the thing costs more than than actually a well-lived-in, well-taken-care-of, well-managed property even in Windhoek. And then the other scenario is sometimes that the buyers and sellers, for some reason, sellers think, for example, let's say you live in what part of Karatura is the oldest? What part of Karatura? I think that the oldest.
Shandumbala.
Let's take a house in Shandumbala.
Yeah.
People living in Shandumbala, because that first part here behind the shop, right?
Yeah,
police station and the court. Yeah. That part is the oldest of Karatura.
Mm.
Those older houses, if the person has built themselves a triple story thing and it looks nice and it's got bells and whistles and it's even got an internal elevator and climate controlled air conditioning and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The owner of that house wants to ask 5 million in Shandumbala.
Yes.
Versus a house in, let's say here in Ludwigsdorf, that you can see the 5 million worth. You can literally see the 5 million.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, what many people do is they go find an assessor that assesses the property.
Okay.
And that assessor then says, here's my assessment.
Is that the same as evaluator?
It's the same person, I think.
Okay.
But it just depends on which word you use.
Okay.
And then you take that and you give it to a bank or you give it to the person that wants to buy. You tell them this is the assessment that was recently done. Now, the concerns here is literally Namibia's housing market is a seller's market. It's not a buyer's market. A seller's market is a seller can ask you any price. Happy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, this house can look like a palace, ne? Let's, for example, go to Okanya.
Mm-mm.
This house can look like a palace where I'm standing.
Mm-mm-mm.
The house right next to me can have like an outside toilet that stinks the whole neighborhood up.
Yeah.
Because sanitation is just not catered for properly in the town.
Yeah.
And I want to ask 5 million, but literally any seller would tell me, but what about that guy's property right next to me that's busy stinking up the whole atmosphere where we're having this meeting?
Yeah.
Now, the downside is I can still get that price.
You can still sell the house at that price.
I can still sell at that price because it has happened in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So the downside literally is Namibia has to try and reach a buyer's market scenario. So a buyer's market scenario means oversupply of Ervin and homes. Fixed build homes, and then literally, which then has to bring down the price. And the other discussion that's also taking a bit long is that members of parliament in the parliament scenario, this is now above the city of Windhoek's level,
of course,
is that members of parliament are trying to, they still have to finish that land bill discussion. And the land bill discussion's main aim is centered on rural land, farming land, communal land, and a very small portion of urban land. Now, if urban land can be influenced by foreigners coming in with foreign money, so does it really meet the needs of people that don't have homes?
No, it's not.
So there's a lot of, not nuances, but there's too many gaps that don't speak to any cohesion. And the lack of cohesion doesn't speak to any particular clear economic goals that Namibia wants to achieve. Because, Happy, if you go today, if I give you a million US dollars,
mm-hmm.
believe you me, you won't be able to own a piece of land in other parts of the world very easily, even if you have the million on your name.
Mm.
But it's easy in Namibia,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
specifically for anyone from anywhere to come and own land in Namibia.
Which is so wrong and needs to be.
And the downside is also the aims of our policies. Do you want to entice Namibians to go live in the bush? I call it now bush in terms of rural land discussion. Mm-hmm. Or are you trying to meet urban needs in this discussion? And then urban needs is basically what City of Windhoek is trying to address. Transportation, adequate transportation, adequate residential infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
and then the other particular add-ons that would come.
Interesting. Thank you, Dwight.
Not a problem.
Okay. And with that being said, let's just pause here shortly, and we'll be back with News Beyond the Borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushe njife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, the South African government is set to continue working with different nations for safe, voluntary repatriation of their citizens. It's so bad that it has come to such, to that.
I want to take you back to KZN and Sherwood, where it seems there's been some level of instability now following the presence of Ngizwe Mkhunu. This is, of course, at the repatriation site in Sherwood. I believe that our reporter, Nonhlakanipho Magwaza, is now standing by to bring us the very latest. A very good morning to you, Nonhlakanipho. When we spoke earlier, relatively calm. Now, when we had to go back to get the very latest, it seems that everybody has been riled up, tensions quite high there. We even saw police attempting to quell those tensions. What has happened? What result or what has led to those visuals that we saw a bit earlier on?
Yes, just as you have said that people got riled up after speaking to you earlier this morning. One of the organizers of the campaign for undocumented foreigners to return home was here to check up if they are really boarding the buses to go home. As soon as he stepped near them, they started throwing his words to him, saying that abahambe, meaning you must go, we don't need you here, and they threw everything to him, the pillows, their food, their cold drink, even men who were sitting further away, they came closer because they wanted him to vacate the premises. So they became angry, saying that he wanted them to go, now he is here. They also want him to go. The process of the females boarding the bus was delayed a bit, but now it has resumed. People are still putting their luggages into the bus, and the process of trying to get the list going has now resumed as well. As you can see, they're still a bit agitated. They are saying that when we spoke to them earlier, they said that they don't, they were not here to take anyone's job. The jobs were there, they were available. It's just that South Africans were not interested in those jobs. Now, suddenly, they are the ones taking jobs. So the narrative is not fair to them. That's what they're saying. As you can see, they're still a bit agitated right now. They're still a bit riled up, even though the one mentioned has left the premises. However, the police were here. They did calm the situation down, even though together to talk to their people to calm down and not to get riled up, so that the process of boarding the buses can resume. I'm not sure if I will be able to speak to one of the men here, but we spoke to one of them earlier on, who said that they are waiting for buses. They are assuming that by next week there will be buses for them to go. So right now, they are just seeing their women and children home. They are making sure that they settle in buses and that they have boarded the buses going back home.
Meanwhile, East African status focus on growth and reforms in 2026-2027 financial year.
Fiscal year, with export revenues expected to surpass $10 billion. Now, according to the minister, this will help to reduce the budget deficit. Here's Becca Atoma with more on that from Addis Ababa.
The Ethiopian government is projecting higher spending for the 2026-27 fiscal year, with total expenditure expected to increase to a record $14.6 billion. presenting the budget proposal to Parliament, Finance Minister Ahmed Shide attributed the increase to the rising global security-related costs, while underscoring the government's commitment to sustaining the country's economic stability.
The federal government's proposed budget for the 2026-2027 fiscal year has been prepared with the country's macroeconomic priorities and overall development targets in mind. During the fiscal year, Ethiopia's economy is projected to grow by 10.1%. However, preliminary assessments show that the crisis in the Middle East is likely to affect that growth outlook. As a result, the 2026-2027 budget has been prepared in a way that helps to mitigate the potential impact of the conflict on the economy.
The minister says, despite increased spending, the budget deficit for the fiscal year will be reduced to 1.4% of the GDP, down from the 2.2% projected for the current fiscal year. While it may seem paradoxical, economists say there are reasons to believe the government can achieve the targets.
The Ethiopian nominal gross domestic product is increasing, boosting. Whenever the nominal gross domestic product is increasing, which is actually the denominator of the budget deficit, automatically the budget deficit will be reduced. This is one factor. The other factor which contributes toward this increasing spending and at the same time reducing the budget deficit is that the government is undertaking aggressive domestic revenue mobilization through increasing the tax base, through digitalizing the taxes and encouraging those who are honestly paying the tax as a national hero. This contributes towards increasing the government revenue and towards just reducing the budget deficit.
Analysts expect Ethiopia's ongoing homegrown economic reform program to continue delivering positive results, improving access to foreign currency, boosting manufacturing growth, and driving stronger export earnings in the coming fiscal year. Yet, the path ahead may not be entirely smooth.
We are living in a very dynamic, very turbulent world. Price of commodities are going to be volatile for the country like ours, Ethiopia, where import is high. And I also expect that there will be inflationary pressure. I know very well that the Ethiopian government is following very prudent fiscal policy and the tightened monetary policy, but global scenarios are there at pressure, and the inflationary pressure will be there.
For now, the government's betting that strong economic growth and rising exports revenue will allow the country to spend more while keeping its finances under control. Beka Toma, CGTN, Addis Ababa.
Now, just across the pond, Uganda unveiled its $22.5 billion budget. And a day after it did that, attention is now turning.
A question around changing Africa's narrative as Africa's global image has been filtered through the lens of international broadcasters, development agencies, and foreign documentaries. Our conversation on how Africa is being perceived today through social media.
Documentary filmmaker and photographer Dr. Tunde Alabi Hunde in the second, from Accra, explorer and travel storyteller Chika Onobugu, from Johannesburg, Lerato Mokwate, head of communications with Africa No Filter, and also in Johannesburg, actor and author Tricia Mpisi. Welcome everyone to the program. Thank you for joining us. Chika, let me start off with you here. Could you first talk to us about what you do and why you choose to do it?
What I do is I explore the continent, and I'm pretty much focused on showing people areas and aspects of Africa that they have not encountered before. I like to say that I tell people stories that they would not find anywhere else about the continent. And for me, the major reason why I do it is to spark curiosity and give people a different perspective of Africa. Pretty much, in summary, give them an Africa that they have never seen or experienced before, and make them want to have these experiences for themselves and form an opinion about the continent based off of their own experiences.
So Tunde, this kind of ties in your field as a documentary filmmaker. What surprises you the most, though, in the responses to the content that you exhibit?
So my work mostly gets seen in diaspora, and people admit that they had a narrow or outdated idea of the continent. You know, they say that the content helps them to rethink the continent. It helps them to see nuance and diversity, and not as a monolith, you know. So the biggest surprise is that normal life content is revolutionary to people, you know, because they had been used to seeing poverty narratives and disempowering narratives about people from Africa. So really, I get to kinds of feedback, you know, curiosity-led feedback, where people tell me, oh, tell me more about this and that culture, tell me more about this context, you know, I never knew this existed and things like that. And, you know, some identity-led feedback.
Let me cross over now to get Lerato's opinion here. You're with Africa No Filter. Tell us a little bit about Africa No Filter and how this idea came about.
Africa No Filter is a narrative change organization, an advocacy organization that is shifting stereotypical narratives of Africa to highlight the continent through opportunity, through progress and innovation, because for too long, the stories told about the continent and its people have revolved around stereotypes. And we know that that is not the, the truth of Africa. There isn't just poverty and disease. There's also development, there's progress, there's creativity, there's food, there's destinations, there's sports, there's arts and culture, a multiplicity of stories and narratives. And we believe that this is the Africa that the world should know about, but the Africa that also the continent and its people should know about.
Valerato, it is quite difficult, though, to change a perception that's been there for centuries.
Indeed. It took many, many, many centuries, as you pointed out, for Africa to be defined through stereotypical narratives. But at the same time, it also takes stories to shift narratives. And so even though the change will not happen overnight, I believe we are also starting to see shifts in how the continent is understood and engaged with. For example, we're seeing Africa showing up through Afrobeats and Amapiano. We're seeing it come up through visual art, one of the most influential, in fact, the most influential artist in the world right now, the most influential person in the art world is a Ghanaian artist. So as Africa progresses, as we platform and share these stories, the narrative will change, because if it takes a story to create a perception, it will equally take stories to shift that perception. And the stories are there. It is just that they are undertold and underreported.
So, Tricia, is that narrative changing, though? I mean, are you hearing anything that is suggesting that social media is changing perceptions about Africa, or are the stereotypes sort of deeply entrenched?
I mean, I think, like Lerato said, there's been centuries of narratives around Africa, and that's not going to change because of, what, 10 years of social media immediately. But I think we have been seeing a change, especially in recent years. Two examples come to mind. iShow Speed's recent Africa tour, where a lot of people were saying things like they didn't know Africa even had roads or infrastructure, etc., which is still a little bit ignorant, but at least now they know. And one of my favorite creators, Charity Ekeze, she responds to African stereotypes through sarcasm and humor. Mm-hmm. So if someone will say there's Africa has houses, she'll shoot the video in her house to show the opposite of what's portrayed. So I think it's slowly starting to change, especially considering that most young people on social media, them realizing these things quite young, I think it will change the perception in the future for sure.
So Tunde, I want to get your view on that as well.
The world leaders welcome US-Iran peace deal.
Essentially, what we've heard from US President Donald Trump is that the oil will start to flow. So there, a reference to toll-free access to the Strait of Hormuz, this incredibly vital waterway that has become a choke point for much of the world's energy. Around 20% of the world's oil and liquefied natural gas flows through the Strait of Hormuz, which has had a major ramifications for the global energy market. So a suggestion there that the Strait Strait of Hormuz will begin to reopen. Questions, though, about when normalcy can be returned. Issues such as mine clearing still very much remain to be seen. Another key issue is that this is believed to include Lebanon in this peace deal. So really, even though the likes of Israel and Lebanon not signatories to this peace deal expected on Friday, it will contain components that there will be a cessation in fighting that has encompassed much of southern Lebanon as well. And crucially as well, that issue of the nuclear materials in Iran. There is a 60-day window for Tehran and Washington to agree on exactly how to remove this nuclear dust, as President Trump calls it.
All right. Now, on that Lebanon part, it seemed that it was quite contentious, because reports that we're also getting is that America will actually not be able to put pressure, or they've stated that they don't want to put pressure on Israel to stop its offensive against Hezbollah in this respect, that possibly it might not even make it. You're saying that, in fact, that will be part of the deal, that they'll have to apply pressure on Israel to move out of Lebanon.
There's certainly real pressure from Iran, stating that there must be a cessation in these attacks, given how close Iran and Hezbollah really are. Of course, with Israel not being a part of these signatures, there are real concerns from all parties and analysts that this deal is still very fragile. We saw this play out really in the last 24 hours. There were strikes in southern Beirut once more, real concerns that could have thrown this deal once again into serious jeopardy. There were reports that President Trump had a very frank, very candid call with Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So that just shows just how fragile this peace plan really is, considering the fact that this is much more than just a deal between Iran and the United States.
Indeed, it impacts the world, in fact. Then to the reactions, which world leaders have reacted to this development, but also even just the reaction of the EU, because initial reports are that they are cautiously welcoming this.
Absolutely. And those comments from the EU reverberate. And we've heard that tone really echoed by a number of partners across the Middle East, the likes of Egypt, for example, expressing their hopes that this can lead to a degree of peace and stability for the region. And really, that's the message we're hearing from European Union leaders, the likes of European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, the EU's top diplomat Kaja Kallas, calling for swift implementation. You mentioned this joint statement released by France, the UK, Germany and Italy. Now, they've called this as a moment of opportunity to both restore regional stability as well as to stabilise the global economy that you rightly mentioned has been so badly impacted by this conflict. They're calling not just for the swift implementation, but also have touched on what could come next, the potential role that European powers could play when it comes to trying to ensure the peaceful and safe navigation for commercial vessels through the Strait of Hormuz, and being a part of this mine-clearing operation that could conceivably, according to some analysts, take months to fully clear.
Okay, and now with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program as we cross over for that, and tune in tomorrow, same time, same place, for another episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Goodbye.